This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We go to a gentleman who's been with us numerous times over the years. He is John Schumann from NBA.com, and he joins us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. John, happy All-Star break to
hey,
you.
Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
We're well. Good. We're doing well. What'd you think of the All-Star break, first of all, before we get to the meat and potatoes here? What'd you think of the All-Star break and the new format for the game and all of that stuff?
Most important, I enjoyed having a few days off of, you know, off from the deluge of NBA games that just come, that never stops. So, yes, that part was good. I thought the dunk contest was kind of fun. I thought Stephen Castle did a great job. I don't know if there's any beating Mac McClung, but I enjoyed the dunk contest. And I think the All-Star game was a little bit more competitive than it has been in the past. So that's a positive, you know, development. I think there's still some tweaks that could be made to the format and just how the night goes. But I think it was a step forward, I guess, a little bit.
When you look at this, and the league is looking at this more than that, like, what does the league think when they walk out of a weekend like this? Especially because, you know, LeBron waits the last second to decide he's not going to play. We were talking about that story yesterday, and I'm like, you know, I understand that some people are ripping him for this, but if I'm really mad, I'm like in the NBAPA thinking, man, he stopped another player from being an All-Star because it took so long. But if he's hurt, he's hurt. I mean, what can he do? So your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm not going to assume what happened, or I'm not going to try to guess as to what happened, what his motivation was, how he was feeling when he woke up Sunday morning, or anything like that. I agree that it stinks that it didn't give an opportunity to somebody like Norman Powell or Domantas Sabonis to be to be an All-Star. Instead, those are always great opportunities, especially for somebody who's never been there before, like Powell. I have no idea. If he says he felt good enough on Saturday and then woke up on Sunday and realized he couldn't play, then, you know, that's what he says. I'm not going to try to assume. I'm not going to rip him for anything like that.
Sure. A lot of people are, though, John. That's how I'm like, okay, if he's hurt, he can't play. I mean, what do you want?
I don't care what, I mean, I doubt he cares much what other people think either. And personally, I don't listen to the hot take stuff, so it doesn't matter to me.
You hit the All-Star break, and the Cleveland Cavaliers have a record of 44-10 and a 5.5 game lead in the Eastern Conference. And your reaction to that is what?
Wow. If you had told me that at the beginning of the season, I'd be a little bit surprised just because of how dominant the Celtics were last year, right? Like, to have another team be so far ahead of the Celtics is a little bit surprising. But then when you think about it, yeah, the Celtics have maybe a little bit of a championship hangover and sort of a knowledge of that they can sort of turn it on when they need to. And I thought Cleveland had definitely had room for improvement when we came into the season, right? Just with how young Evan Mobley was and how the potential for him to get better, and obviously having a new coach look at things differently and changing things up. So it's not a huge shock, I don't think, but it's obviously, you know, a great position for them to be in. And I think just going forward, it's just like, okay, can they beat the Celtics? You know, I think the good thing is that, you know, they have the Celtics, the Cavs have the clear path. Like, right. Like, I think it would be difficult for the Celtics or even the Knicks to catch them. So they're going to be the one of those three sort of top teams in the East that doesn't have to play one or the other on the way to the conference finals. So they do have the clear path. Not that, you know, they're automatic, you know, going to push them automatically in the conference finals, but it's good that they don't have to worry about one of those other two teams earlier in the playoffs.
What did you think of the DeAndre Hunter pickup for the Cavs right before the break?
You know, I was a little surprised in that, just because Caris LeVert had been so good for the first few months of the season, and like I thought was a big key to their success. Like, I think we've talked about this in the past. Like, the Cavs, you know, for those first few months, they were really at their best when they had only two of their top four guys on the floor, and they were able to have two of those guys on the floor with bench units against weaker bench units from the opponent. And so Caris LeVert was a big part of that. And the fact that he was shooting, you know, lights out, like having the best shooting season of his career. Of course, he slowed down at the end. What I think he missed like his last 10 shots with the Cavs. But so it's a little bit surprising. But I do see the appeal of Hunter just with the size that he brings. Probably just a better shooter off the catch, I would think. Maybe complements the two star guards a little bit better. So I'm intrigued, but I can't wait to sort of see him after 10, 12 games with the Cavs and just see how that's working out, what kind of lineups they use down the stretch of games, if he's the guy, and, you know, how his minutes are working out for them.
John, you put out power rankings every week. In your latest power rankings, number one, Oklahoma City. I get that. Number two, the Boston Celtics. I get that as well. I understand that. Cavaliers, you have at number three, Denver at four, and the New York Knicks at five. Your top teams in the Eastern Conference, if the Cavs are going to get out of that, is it New York that they have to beat? And, you know, who knows where it all lies up. But Boston, clearly. New York's going to be a challenge. We know that. Anybody else in the East who you think this is a team that could come out of that conference?
No. Honestly, no. I think Indiana is intriguing. Like, Indiana has a high ceiling. And they made the conference finals last year. And I'm not going to make an injury excuse for that, or, like, you know, call it, say that was just because of injuries to the Knicks and the conference semis. They played great. And their offense is, when it's clicking, is really, really hard to defend. But I just think those top three teams are just on a tier above everybody else. Milwaukee has never really put it together. Milwaukee's also played kind of an easy schedule to date, and they're going to have a tougher schedule going down the stretch. Detroit is good, but not great. Orlando has an awesome defense and just absolutely awful offense. So, like, and that's it, basically, right? So those are the teams that you would consider somewhat dangerous on a night-to-night basis. And I really think the top three teams are just on a level by themselves. And I think the Cavs and Celtics are even just a level ahead of the Knicks, who haven't beaten the Cavs or Celtics or Thunder at all this season.
Was the Cavs' advancement this year as simple as Kenny Atkinson? Like, I know we sit around and we talk about it, the team's essentially the same as it was last year, at least even before the trade. And to think that, you know, you bring him in, J.B. Bickerstaff ends up in Detroit when it's all said and done. And was it that was the philosophy change that simple to make a team this much better after watching what we saw last year?
No, I mean, I think some guys are having career years. Like, if you look at the bench, like we said, LeVert, you know, him, you know, having a great year. Ty Jerome. I mean, but of course, those guys playing so well, and Evan Mobley, you know, taking a big step forward, also, you know, Kenny Atkinson has his hand in that, right? Like he's somewhat responsible for Ty Jerome playing and having, you know, playing so well. He's somewhat responsible for LeVert's resurgence before he was traded. He's somewhat responsible for Evan Mobley, you know, having a bigger hand in the offense and just playing better. So, yeah, I think he's going to get a lot of credit for it. But, you know, obviously the players got to play and the players are the ones winning them games. I think he's still a coach of the year favorite, although there's other coaches that are deserving, as well. And I think, yeah, if they continue to lead the East, or if they win the East by 5-6 games, it'll be hard to vote against him for coach of the year.
John Schumann joining us from NBA.com. I think it's interesting that you have two teams who have kind of gone about things a different way, who are sitting on top of their conferences right now. Cavaliers put together some young guys and then finish it off by trading just a boatload to go get Donovan Mitchell, future first rounders that haven't even begun to be used yet. And then you have Oklahoma City that gutted their team and picked up draft choices like absolute crazy, have stocked their team with young talent and still have draft choices to go. If you're looking down the road 3, 4, 5 years, where are those two teams? Can the Cavs sustain it without draft picks? And will Oklahoma City end up trading those for vets? What are they going to do?
I think Oklahoma City is absolutely best set up to be just a dominant team for the next 3 or 4 years. And right now, I would pick them to win the championship this year. And then thinking about that and how young they are, I guess I would pick them to win the championship, at least a couple of times in the next 4 or 5 years. I think Cleveland's set up great just because Mobley is so young, and Garland is young, and Mitchell is still, in his prime. The Cavs are set up really well. It's just a matter of, filling in the pieces and making sure they have the depth to just sort of keep guys fresh, especially Mitchell. They can, Evan Mobley is still, he still has a long way to go. He could get much, much better. So that obviously can continue to raise their ceiling going forward.
John, can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
Now I'm scared. Go ahead, let's hear this.
How does a guy with a bachelor's degree in architecture from Virginia Tech end up getting a job and writing about the NBA? Bet your mom and dad are thrilled with those tuition dollars.
We don't have time for that. But let's just say it was a long and winding road. But I'm happy to be doing what I'm doing, and I'm happy. At some point, I was happy to put the world of architecture behind me.
That degree couldn't have been cheap, my friend. Congratulations to your parents.
Yeah.
John, we love your insight always, and we appreciate you being with us for years. Thanks, John.
All right, guys. Go Hokies.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
In first place, record of 44-10, the Cavs. 5.5 games back, the Boston Celtics in the East. The Knicks are 8 games back. And then you have Indiana, 13.5. Milwaukee at 14.5. This season has gone so much better than I think the folks, even the folks who run the Cavs, if you ask Kobe Altman, Did you think you'd be 5.5 games up?
Of course I did, Jeff. Or, you know, this is how we looked at the season going into this. We knew we could win every game.
On the fourth place team. I mean, Andy, you're not falling. You're not falling out of the top two. I'd be stunned if the Cavaliers didn't finish first or second in the conference. Be stunned. Welcome back to Baskin and Phelps.
I agree. Well, how many games have they left? 44-10 is.
They've got about a third of the season still.
50.
But the thing of it is that the way they've played looks like it's really sustainable to me. You know, they've done a really nice job. Their defense has been solid enough, I think, to get the job done. It's been solid enough. In the Eastern Conference, it's been one of the better defenses.
What did we say, 28 games ago? So they can clinch up a playoff spot here probably as early as Bulls are 22.5.
Well,
back.
You don't have to worry about that.
I'm just saying.
They have a playoff spot. You know, can they clinch the number one and number two seed? Yeah, I think they can do that.
Yeah, I think so too. I agree with you. It's 5.5 just feels like, does it feel big
or
small?
That's not insurmountable against the Celtics.
No, and especially if the Celtics beat the Cavs and they play here, 9 days, something like that?
I think the Cavs are going to have to play well. I think the Celtics will play well down the stretch, and the Celtics just could end up with a number one seed. But it's a pretty decent hill to climb here, 5.5 games. That's pretty serious. But it could happen. I do not see the Knicks catching the Cavs. Knicks at 8 games back right now. I wonder this. Cavs are so predicated on the three-point shot. I wonder, and I'm looking down the road here, I wonder if in a playoff series where teams can focus on what you do, you know, and not worry about other things, I mean, all of the other team's efforts are going to be going to stopping one team night after night. I wonder if teams are able to really dig into the Cavaliers' three-point shot and maybe take that aspect of the game away, or at least diminish it a little bit. Cavs right now, number one scoring team in the East at over 122 points per game. And I wonder if the team is built for a playoff series. I think DeAndre Hunter helps. I really do. I think it's a nice addition. But I just wonder. And then you get into a series, and that's, you know, we'll see how the new philosophy with the new offense and some of the defense remaining plays in the playoffs.
Obviously, the eyes of the nation are watching. I mean, see how many games they have on national TV coming up here? Just even before March 5th?
More than a few.
Yeah, I mean, they're on ESPN 4 times between now and March 5th. They are also on NBA TV once on March 2nd, and TNT True and Max once, too, against Orlando. So, you know, people are interested. Because the TV networks aren't pulling those games if they don't think the people want to watch it. So I'm looking ahead to games that they should win versus loss and how close they can get this. Brooklyn, New York, Memphis, Orlando, Boston round out the month. So February 28th is Boston. I'd sure be nice to get a win against them. I know the regular season doesn't mean anything when we get to the playoffs, but psychologically I think that if you can pick up a couple wins against these guys, it's not going to hurt. I just, the thought of having to go up against a team that you haven't beaten in the playoffs doesn't help, but at least the Cavs have done that too. They've already beat Boston once, so that's a big deal. That December 1st game where they won by 4 at home against Boston gives you the confidence, I think, to propel you into the postseason saying, hey, we can beat anybody. I already think they think that. It is amazing to see how well they do against teams over 500. I mean, they're strong, very strong. So,
I thought it was interesting to hear John Schumann, who was just with us from NBA.com. If you missed that conversation, by the way, or a chat with Anthony Castrovince from MLB.com or Amy Trask from CBS Sports, former CEO of the Raiders, go back and listen to it on the Odyssey app, 92.3thefan.com. I thought it was interesting to hear John say that he liked the Cavs' long-term possibilities because Evan Mobley is still so young. You know, Evan, when you take a look at him, just looks like the type of guy. And you watch his game and you think, this guy's still growing. He's still so young. And there's still so much more that he might be able to add to his game and do. And honestly, that's why I think the Cavaliers' immediate future is pretty bright. It's because of him. Now, Darius is also young. Donovan Mitchell isn't old. Neither is Jared Allen. But I'm curious as to how they're going to be able to add to the team in the years ahead. You know, when you're in the next 5 years, when you don't have a first-round pick to trade, just another,
they don't have a lot of assets.
No. Yeah. And I wonder how you're going to be able to do that. Are you going to be able to attract free agents to come in and supplement this team? And the type of free agents that you would have to come in to supplement the team wouldn't be, I wouldn't think, you know, big-time guys, because in theory you already have your big-time guys. Right? You have Jarrett, you have Evan, and you have two guards, and now you have a small forward. It would just be role players to come in and fill out the rotation. So we'll see. Or you have Oklahoma City, who is just stocked with draft picks still and really good young talent. You know, they can package first-round picks and go get big-time player to come in and, you know, be a huge part of their team. It's been weird to be in this mode, though, and I think we've been in it for some time because the Cavs' start has been so good. Their season has been so good. Just that, okay, well, what happens in the playoffs? You remember anything that's been this, like, so quickly? All right, well, let's see what happens in the playoffs. Because, man, it's been that way for...
You mean of any sport or just Cavaliers?
Since, no, any sport. It's been that way since about January.
Didn't the Guardians feel that way a little bit to you last year? Early?
No.
They didn't?
No.
And when you start the season, whether they're 16-0 to start the season, I don't know how you can't have that kind of... I mean, I remember when they were, even before they lost to Boston in that first game of the season, to have the loss, you were like, they're already in the playoffs. And I'm like, man, it feels really early to say that. But you're right. I think you're right. I still think you're right. Have we ever had a team? Well, I don't know. When the Indians were playing in the 90s, you always felt like, you know, they were on autopilot to get to the playoffs.
Which is hard to believe because there are so few playoff teams.
But they were so good.
Ugh. They were so good.
Those lineups, you'd sit there and you'd be like, we have an all-star in every slot. And what was it? Tomy was hitting eighth? I mean, we had so many.
Or Manny.
Yeah. Manny Ramirez was hitting eighth. Are you serious?
Sandy was hitting ninth.
So, yeah, I don't know that I've ever felt this good or strong about a team. I'm
so quickly.
Concerned. Yeah, but I am concerned about a 7-game series because it's just not the same. And I think this, yeah, but here's an advantage. I think the team learned that last year. The young guys on this team learned. They were like, hey, this isn't getting into the play-in tournament. This isn't getting a little better than that. This isn't winning in the play-in. This is like big boy basketball. And I think that when you have a team as young as they were, especially last year, and you know still young now, that they have more experience to understand how to play the 7-game series out, rather than you know just being in a hurry.
What do you think Evan Mobley can become? Can he become?
Is he Chris Bosh?
I think he's better than Chris Bosh.
Already, you think he's better than Chris Bosh?
I think he's Chris Bosh now. With upside to come.
Before LeBron, Toronto Chris Bosh or Miami Chris Bosh?
He was better in Toronto.
Bosh was better.
Yeah.
Was a more impactful player in Toronto. I agree.
I think that's an interesting comparison because they're you know, both lanky kind of guys who you thought you know they have enough muscle to do the gig, you know, be more of an inside guy. Do you want him to be more of an inside guy?
Totally annoying, though, if he's not on your team, right?
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that was true.
It's the ultimate compliment.
Jeff's in University Heights. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Good afternoon, Andy and my namesake.
Yes, sir.
There you go.
You're a lot better, Jeff, than I am, I'm sure.
I wouldn't say that.
Yeah, I would. But, you know, you guys are talking about the Cavs and the three-point shot. The Celtics depend on that, too.
They sure do.
In fact, I think they yank more threes than any team in the league, which allows, as we've seen the three times they played the Cavs, allow the Cavs to get back in the game when, you know, they were behind by, quite a few points. The other thing, too, Jeff, I kind of disagree with you slightly. If the Cavs finish second, to me that's kind of a disappointment after leading so long for the entirety of the season. And you've got a 5.5-game lead with 28 left. I mean, if you go 20-8, you should hold on to that spot. And that's about to the percentage that they're playing right now. So the way I look at it, if they were to give up that number one seed in the East means that they had a very disappointing stretch run, which that doesn't bode well for the playoffs. And Boston would have to play amazing down the stretch. So I think it's a disappointment if they don't have the number one seed. And then the other thing, too, it's to their advantage to have it because you avoid a possible New York series in the second round and then have to beat New York and Boston to get to the finals, whereas if you were the number one seed, you only have to beat one of those teams.
I would agree with that, Jeff.
That's a good point.
I don't think I said it would be a disappointment if they dropped the two, did I? If I did.
No, you didn't say it would be a disappointment.
I think there's a possibility.
There's a possibility. Yeah. I'm saying it's a disappointment
I would
if they
agree
dropped
with you.
The two seed.
No, I would agree with you. If they do drop the two with a 5.5 game lead with about 28 to play, that would be disappointing. Because
right, that means they would have been playing poorly down the stretch, and you don't want to be playing poorly down the stretch.
Or the Celtics are on absolute fire, as you pointed out, Jeff.
That, and one last thing real quick before I go. Jeff and Andy, my opinion, and people probably disagree with this, but if the Cavs don't get to at least the Eastern Conference Finals, to me they're the 2017 Indians. You know, the Indians went on that long winning streak and won 102 games and got blitzed by the Yankees in the first round of the playoffs. So if the Cavs get knocked off, God forbid, in the first round or even in the second round, to me this season is a disappointment as well.
Which would make me think, do they tweak with anything out of their core four guys, or do they roll it back again, Jeff? So
that would remain to be seen. And, you know, the most likely in that case to be traded would probably be Jared Allen. You're not trading Mobley, you're not trading Mitchell, and based on the year the Garland's had this year, you're not going to trade him. So if they trade one of the core four, that leaves Jared Allen.
Hopefully we don't have to think about that, right, Jeff?
Yes, please. I don't want to think. Gosh, that's typical Cleveland thinking. So.
All right, buddy. Thanks, bud.
All right.
Jeff in University Heights.
BasketballReference.com has playoff probabilities.
Fabulous.
Where you're going to land.
Website.
Yeah. Where you're going to land. Mm-hmm. Want to guess where the Cavs percentage point is for landing first?
93% chance.
Oh, you're so off. You're better than that.
Not really.
95.5. You can do better, Jeff.
I'll try, Andy.
And then leaving them a 4.5% chance of being in second, and that's it. They are 100% in 1 through 6.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not changing.
No.
I
think it's just interesting. 95% chance, 95.5% chance of being the number one seed with a 5.5 game lead with, 28 games left in the season.
The one thing that's slightly scary, the only thing, you know, if you're looking at it here, and Jeff's right, if the Knicks stay at 3 and you got the Celtics and the Knicks over in the same bracket, that's good. Does any other team in the East get hot? You know, does any team get hot who you don't want to face in the first round? Again, Philadelphia is the only team to me. I personally wouldn't care to see Milwaukee. I know other people don't really fear Milwaukee. I don't fear them. If I could avoid them, I wouldn't mind doing that either. It's Baskin and Phelps right here on The Fan.